Live from Liverpool, The Dark Paranormal, Season 16. Hello everyone and welcome back to Episode 4, Season 16 of The Dark Paranormal. As ever, a huge thank you to everyone who reached out following Episode 3, Chosen from the Darkness. It was one of our most interesting episodes in terms of people's responses. And I love it when you guys put together theories of your own in regards to why something may have taken place. So please keep that coming in. And again, the same email address applies for any paranormal experience that you wish to have heard by our listeners. Simply email it over to contact@thedarkparanormal.com and we'll make sure it finds a home either on a minisode, Dark Bites, or even a full episode of The Dark Paranormal. Now, if you're a long-standing fan of the show, you'll know by now how I like to plan out a season. Because I never know what's going to land in the email box throughout a season, I like to have the flexibility if something comes in that I decide warrants jumping ahead and going into that season. And that's exactly what we're going to do today. Because today we're going to hear about somebody's experiences that they had while serving in the military. And this email intrigued me because it came in two parts. Part one arguably was good enough and long enough for a minisode. And then the second part came along. And the two stitched together forms a perfect narrative for a full episode of The Dark Paranormal. But it was Rachel's opening paragraph to her second email that made me choose to put this in here. Because she wrote, "Anyone who knows me knows this is a passion of mine. I don't hide that I experience things because I often find people say, I don't believe in the paranormal. But there was this one time." And then a story follows. Or others get excited when someone shares their interest. Either way, with so many people experiencing these things, why do so many people hide it? That's why I love your show. It gives people a platform to share these amazing events. And whether you're a believer or a skeptic, isn't it just all rather fascinating? And I love how Rachel worded that because that's how I feel about the topic. And I'm sure how many of you guys feel about the topic. And Rachel's right, like we've said, this is your platform. So do use that email address, contact@thedarkparanormal.com, and send over any experience that you've had. But of course, before we reach Rachel's amazing experiences, we need to, of course, thank our wonderful team over at Patreon. When you decide to join our team at Patreon, not only do you receive these episodes both ad-free and before anyone else, and that also goes for minisodes, but you can also gain access to Dark Bites. Dark Bites releases each and every Sunday of the year without fail, and features many of the experiences that are just not long enough for either a minisode or a full episode of The Dark Paranormal. And currently, there are over 60 hours worth of Patreon-only episodes for you to go and binge. But as I say each and every week, and I mean it, our community is the best thing about our Patreon. We've built a wonderful community of like-minded paranormal enthusiasts over on Patreon. And we'd love to extend an exclusive invitation just for you. Simply head over to patreon.com/thedarkparanormal, just like the following wonderful new team members have. Mark G, Del Warren, Shares, Paul Greer, Tashawn Flowers, Steve Skinner, Maria Grossi, Dakota, Scream Queen, Alison Hopkins, The Disavowed One, Ting Ting, Christian, Nancy Tershwar Diaz, Sandra D. Ryland, Bexy Tana, Angela Vischer, Sherry, Krista Whitford, Ronnie M, Alicia, Tracy S, LLKJH, and Samantha Palmer. Thank you so much for supporting the show, guys. It genuinely means the world to me. And if you like the sound of early releases to debuts to finales, minisodes, basically anything on this feed, both early to you and ad-free, and on top of that, you can gain access to that back catalogue of over 60 hours of experiences only ever heard by our Patreons, head over to patreon.com/thedarkparanormal. But right now, it's time to lower those lights. Make yourself comfortable, and most importantly, leave your disbelief at the door. as we hear all about a military malevolence. My name is Rachel, and I'm happy for you to use my real name. I have, for as long as I can remember, been fascinated with the paranormal. I have had so many spooky experiences. Some of them were just downright bizarre. In my family, we're not so much gifted as we are accepting of the paranormal. So seeing ghosts or spirits or unusual things, well, it's part of our life. And the majority of my family, they've had experiences too. But they tend to just shrug their shoulders and move on. However, as a lifelong lover of all things strange, I celebrate these paranormal events for what they are to me. A peek into the beyond. The first story I'll tell you about today is one of my more prolonged and scary experiences. For his privacy, my ex-husband will be renamed John. I will also, for privacy, adjust one or two other details. John and I were in our early 20s. We'd both joined the military, completed our training, and been posted to our respective units. Our roles in the army could not have been more different, and that largely influenced who we became. We'd met before being in the army, and for a time, our mutual interest in training to get into the military gave us a common ground. But despite the very obvious changes in who we were, once we'd completed the training, we clung to our relationship and we got married. We were therefore given a married quarter, housing for married personnel. Our house was in Wales, near John's unit, and it was a relatively generous size on a quiet, sprawling estate. The houses were all built around the 1950s. Our house itself was semi-detached. On entering, there would be stairs leading upstairs, and the downstairs was basically a loop, with all areas leading into the next. So sitting room to dining room, through to the kitchen, and the kitchen had a door which would lead back to the same stairs you'd see on entering. Upstairs, you'd find the bathroom, and next to that a separate toilet, and then a second bedroom. If you turned right at the top and walked a short landing, you'd find the master bedroom, and a small bedroom next to that. The relevance of this layout will become apparent later. Due to me being posted in another part of the country, I'd only occasionally come home on some weekends, with John having the house to himself all week. This led to some resentment on my part, as I'd travel home to find the fridge and cupboards bare, the house untidy and unclean. Things were already strained between us, and this lack of domestic consideration, well, it only added fuel to an already smouldering fire. But enough backstory. I very quickly, possibly even the first day I arrived at the house, perceived an energy at the bottom of those stairs in the entrance hall. There was this sensation of being watched through the living room door. In my mind's eye, I could see a girl with long dark hair. I couldn't put an age on her, but she felt younger than 13 and older than 8. Sometimes, it would seem like the light at the bottom of the stairs was dimmer, or that there was like a shadow. Other times, it would feel as if someone had just peeked around the banister at me. Initially, I was a mixture of excited and curious, and I didn't feel afraid. More electric, like there was a physical charge in the atmosphere. Within a few days of moving in, I was upstairs sorting through things, and John came upstairs looking confused and slightly uneasy. "Did you come downstairs a minute ago?" he asked, to which I replied, "No." But he insisted I had been downstairs. which led to a few minutes of us debating on where I had been. In the end, I showed him what I'd been doing. "Why?" I asked. To which he paused, and even now I remember the conflict on his face. Confused, he said, "I was in the cupboard under the sink, and I felt you sneak up behind me." Now, this would not be unusual for me, as I'd often prank him and make him jump. I'd find his reactions funny. "So I span round to catch you," he continued, "try and catch you in the act. But you weren't there. But I was convinced you were. So I went round the downstairs trying to catch you. But I couldn't find you. So I thought maybe you went the other way round the loop. So I looked, and you weren't there." Now, normally, this could be put down to an overactive imagination. But John was not the imaginative type. And more convincingly, he looked noticeably uncomfortable. Like there was more. I did probe further, but all I could get from him that he was certain he was being sneaked up on from behind. Like, in his gut, he knew something had been there. The reason this bothered him so much is because he was an adamant non-believer. My response was to be amused. "I told you," I grinned. "You live with me," I said, "and I'll make you a believer." If only I knew the weight of those words. I'm not sure exactly when, but it can't have been too long after moving in, that I started to notice that when we went to bed, there would be banging and random noises from downstairs. Initially, I was so tired from unpacking and trying to make the place feel like a home that it sort of sat in the background, heard but not acknowledged. It was when we were more settled that it began to stand out. I've always been a terrible night owl, but equally I'd never be happy being alone downstairs when John went to bed. So I'd watch movies on TV in bed, whilst he'd be snoring next to me. First, it was a few sounds, like doors being shut more firmly than needed, cupboards being opened and closed. I would mute the TV, and the house would fall quiet. I was uncertain if it was the adjoining house, but as time went on, there were several factors that shed doubt on that theory. Firstly, my bedtime ranged between 10 p.m. and 3 a.m., and these noises only ever started once I was in bed. Secondly, the family next door had three young children, and I was sure the parents would have had something to say if their children were marauding around at that time of night. Thirdly, as I say, the family had three young children, so the parents would not only be quiet so the kids would be asleep, but also, I guessed, they were probably tired themselves. Fourth, the noises sounded like they were in our house, downstairs. And fifth, they were getting louder and longer, with the banging and slamming now being joined by stomping that went on for hours. When I finally mentioned it to John, he initially brushed me off, until I pointed it out to him when we were in bed. He tried to blame it on next door making all the noise, and I explained my reasons why that was unlikely. Regardless, when we'd look around the house the next morning, nothing was ever out of place. During this period, the relationship had sunk further into darkness. We didn't laugh together anymore. It was almost like there was a cloud over our relationship and the house. I started getting intense headaches whilst in the house. One of the worst attacks left me in tears of blinding pain on the stairs, crawling to get to the bathroom. John seemed to be making more and more excuses to leave the house, leaving me alone, with no access to transport. Work had pulled us in separate directions, and it was like in that space a void was growing. Every night, the noises would start up. I could feel the tension building up to it, like static charge. And each night it felt like whatever this thing was getting bolder. As I lay in bed, listening, I felt my body start to fill with growing fear. And then one night, I heard what I truly dreaded. The stairs creak. I remember straining my ears so much I could hear my blood pumping. Because I wanted to be wrong. It felt like it had been building energy over the past few weeks to get upstairs. I also felt like it knew I was scared of it coming upstairs, like it was taunting me. But then I heard another, closer creak. I turned towards the sleeping John and I buried myself in the covers, just so I didn't have to look at the door. As tension became the normal feeling in the house, our marriage strained. I no longer thought of that presence as a little girl. I wasn't sure what it was. An energy, definitely. Something very loud and very powerful. Something that was now feeding off us, off our growing toxic atmosphere. There were periods when work would send us both away, and on those weekends the house would remain empty. Waiting. Today's show is sponsored by Acorns. Now, one of the things which I always got wrong is I believed that investment was for other people. The sort of people who have a finance degree and use phrases like buy low, sell high. And I don't have a finance degree and I don't use phrases like that. And I also thought that you needed a lot of money to start investing, but that's not the case. Acorns makes it easy to start automatically saving and investing for you, for your kids, for your retirement. You don't need a lot of money or expertise to invest with Acorns. In fact, you can get started with just your spare change. Acorns recommends an expert-built portfolio that fits you and your money goals, then automatically invests your money for you. And now, Acorns is putting their money into your future. Open an Acorns Later IRA and get up to a 3% match on new contributions. That's extra money for your retirement. I'm 45 and not thinking about retirement, but I really should be, and that's why I'm glad places like Acorns exist, because it's a genuine relief to know there are a team of experts waiting to help guide you through that formerly scary world of investment. Head to acorns.com/darkparanormal or download the Acorns app to start saving and investing for your future today.
Paid non-client endorsement. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. Investment involves risk. Acorn Advisors LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/darkparanormal.
Let's have a quick break to talk to you about Policy Genius. There are many things you can put off in life, and life insurance was certainly one of those things for me. I literally only got mine last year. But it turns out I'm not alone, because over 40% of people wish they got life insurance much younger than the age they did. And why don't we do it earlier? Well, you think it's all red tape and forms, but Policy Genius helps you get the life insurance you need fast, because they know you want to get on with your life. And to be perfectly honest, I have a peace of mind I did not expect by getting life insurance. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams. Policy Genius is set up in such a way it saves you time every step of the process. It lets you compare quotes from America's top insurers, meaning it takes just a few clicks to find your lowest price. Policy Genius is the country's leading online insurance marketplace, giving you unbiased advice from a licensed expert support team. They also have no incentive to recommend one insurer over another, so you can trust their guidance. And the thousands of five-star reviews on Trustpilot and Google, well, they kind of prove that point. So don't put off life insurance. Make it easy with Policy Genius.
Head to policygenius.com or click the link in the description to get your free life insurance quote. See how much you could save. That's policygenius.com. One night I was attempting to sleep, my head hurting as it does with atmospheric pressure before a storm. The banging and slamming from downstairs was even more chaotic than usual. And that night, there was a new layer to it. I could feel it. And I felt it could feel me. Like it could sense my growing fear, the growing pain in my head, and an odd heat that was starting to build in my body. I could almost sense its threat of running up the stairs, as if it was very much aware of my fear of what would happen if it did. I am very much a thinker, and often consider many avenues in a situation. But I can hand on heart say I did not, nor did I attempt, to think about exactly what would happen if it decided to come upstairs. I just knew I didn't want it to. It may have been minutes or an hour, but it played with me. Creaking on the bottom of the stairs, slamming further things downstairs, and then it ran upstairs. More banging, and then ran down the stairs. Then it was the strangest sensation, and one I can't even describe now. I didn't so much hear it run up the final few stairs as felt it. I can't say for sure if it physically barged into the bedroom, pushing the door wide, but I felt it, like a rush. I was terrified, and I remember the severe pain in my head, feeling so hot that my skin felt like it was on fire. And rage, absolute violent rage and hatred. I launched out of bed, swearing and yelling, and the next thing I remember, I'm sitting on the toilet, shaking and sobbing, and John standing away from me, staring at me with this strange, worried and slightly scared look. I'd made it from the bedroom, down the hall, and sat on the toilet. And I don't remember it. I felt like something had used me like a puppet. But I had no words to explain that to John. There was a longer period of both of us being away from the house, and when we returned, the neighbours had moved out. The house adjoining ours was empty. That first night, the noise started up again. I prodded John, and in an "I told you so" tone, said, "The kid running around next door, is it?" He didn't say anything at first, just gave me a very uncomfortable look. Then finally said something about maybe the house had a concrete base. And maybe each other house did too. And that sound was travelling down the road to our home. But I knew in my heart this was not anything other than something sentient. Something supernatural. Not too long after this, our marriage completely broke down. I only saw John one more time in that house, and that was whilst I packed my things. I don't remember anything paranormal happening that night, as we were too busy arguing. We decided on total separation, no communication, and the complete end of any relationship. But I did hear from Johnny one last time, and I know he called me because he didn't think anyone else would believe him. I think he also wanted reassurance after my experiences. One morning, I received a phone call, and it was John, sounding very shaken. He told me that the previous night, he'd gone to bed, and the noises had started, but he tried to ignore them and go to sleep. Then, whatever it was, thundered up the stairs, flung open the bedroom door, And he was so terrified, he leapt out of bed and told her to F off. He said he spent the rest of the night with the window wide open next to him, hardly sleeping. I assume the window was open in case he needed to leap out of it, genuinely. But that's just a guess. He also confirmed no one else had moved into the adjoining house. My next experience is also within my military career. Early in my career, shortly after my move to my first unit, we were sent on exercise to support the 10 Tours, a very popular Duke of Edinburgh award scheme for young people. The 10 Tours is set in Dartmoor National Park, which is situated to where I was born. We set up our facility in some outbuildings and in a large three-sided roofless area that would normally be used for silage on a farm. Our setup was away from the main hub of farm buildings. The buildings and the high-sided silage storage protected our tents and vehicles from the harsh moorland elements. It took a few days for the delivery of portaloos to arrive, which meant number ones needed to be done away from the facility, in bushes or in the sides of fields. For anything else, a trip to the local village was required. The first night of the arrival, after setting everything up, I realised I needed to alleviate myself, after steadily hydrating throughout the day. I wandered a short way up the lane, and climbed over a gate into a large field, one that ended in trees. The dark was fast approaching, enhanced by the absence of streetlights and the usual neon imprint of towns and cities. As I relieved myself, the edges of the field disappeared into the darkness, and I felt as though something was hiding in the gloom, watching me. Now, being a local and enjoying folklore, I am very aware my trepidation could have been heavily influenced by my prior knowledge. However, what was to follow was not anything I'd ever heard of or prepared for, as at that time I was keen to prove myself on my new job. The first few days and nights were busy, but nothing out of the ordinary occurred. At some point during that first week, we were in our sleeping area, a large tent which was set up near the rear wall of a silage area. The tent was only occupied by about 8 of us, as the other people were all sleeping in or around their vehicles. There was one staff sergeant, and the rest of us were privates. We were spread out, and everyone except myself and another colleague seemed to be asleep. In the quiet, as I tried to settle, I heard boots approaching a pace towards the tent. Military boots running are distinctive. Anyone who has experienced anything of the military will know the sound of booted running, the pitch, the rhythm, as your feet hit the ground. Whoever it was ran towards us with urgency. But instead of heading towards the entrance of the tent, they went the other way. They lapped the tent, and it sounded like they were tapping on the canvas at random intervals. I mentioned it to my colleague and they acknowledged the noise but didn't seem too keen to discuss it any further. I lay there confused, but thought perhaps it was a weird prank by the radio operators. They had been winding me up over various things all day. But then I thought, how would they know I was still even awake to play the prank? However, as if this thing now had my attention, things rapidly started to get weird. The wind picked up. The tent was shaking. It sounded like there was a storm outside, broken up by intermittent sounds of boots running across the ground. Now, unnerved by what was happening, I again disturbed my colleague, who admitted they, too, knew this was odd. I began to think this could be paranormal in essence, and my colleagues said it could well be, as they apparently have certain reactions to spooky events, and they were getting these reactions now. But they still told me to ignore it and go asleep. But the more I tried to ignore what was happening, the more it got my attention. Now, the sound of thousands of tiny paws scurrying all over the roof of the tent. All I could think of was how rats run away from danger, taking any route available to escape. Then it was as if clods of earth or hail were pelting the tent. Although I was scared, I just assumed the weather had turned for the worse. In the end, I think in a bid to calm me down, my colleague suggested we go outside for a smoke. We grabbed our jackets and prepared to brave that weather. Only what we found absolutely blew my mind. Calm. Dead calm. Not a breath of wind nor rain, and an endlessly clear night sky. A giant glowing white moon so bright it illuminated the yard. Completely baffled, we walked around the tent, looking for any signs of mischief. But there was no one there. And other than the silence, was only the sound of people snoring. Further to that, the high walls that surrounded us, realistically, would have prevented side winds. And if rats were running over the tent roof, they would have had to leap a large gap to get on the roof and off it again. It was like the inside and outside of the tent were two different places. After calming down enough, we went back inside the tent. But inside the tent, the storm raged on. "Just ignore it," my colleague said. But that didn't help. I was terrified. Every second I lay there, it got wilder and wilder. To the point I was in a complete state of panic, and I shouted loudly for whatever it was to F off. This woke the others in the tent up, and I quickly made them witness the apparent storm inside the tent and then invited them out to witness the serene calm. When outside, I told them of the boot running, the weird pattering on the tent. Suitably freaked out, all the guys rapidly moved their kit and themselves so that all seven of us were jammed in one corner of this big tent. Referring to the first people to die in a horror movie, one of the lads dived into the middle of us, and it temporarily broke the tension, and we all laughed. I say seven of us were huddled together because the eighth, the sergeant, stayed in the corner away from us. He semi-sat up, gave a tired, "Are you kidding me?" type of groan, thinking we're all bonkers, and said in a parental tone, "Get back to sleep." He then rolled over and resumed snoring. The next morning, the incident was viewed with amusement. But the colleague who witnessed most of the events with me said they didn't see or hear anything, later telling me they didn't want people knowing they had witnessed anything. This really annoyed me, as I was left to stand alone in my truth. However, it didn't take long for others to admit other occurrences. An occurrence happened to the ambulance crews sleeping in their vehicles. The vehicles apparently began rocking, and they heard sounds of bumping against the van, like cattle had gotten into the field, but when they would check, nothing would be there. I took it with a pinch of salt, thinking I was again being ribbed. However, the night after the tent incident, I swapped into the ambulance crew. I'm guessing it was to ensure everyone could get a good night's sleep, until I heard the noise of something hitting the van. And I lay there as the vehicle rocked back and forth. But this didn't scare me. Now to present day, a couple of months ago, and around 15 years after the event on that farm. My mum and I are sat in a cafe catching up. Our discussion turned to the moors. She's a keen walker and can hike for miles. Having brought up other odd folklore correlations earlier, unrelated to the current topic, I brought up my experience whilst in the army. I referenced a well-known landmark, and out of curiosity, my mum brought up maps on her phone. We located where I'd stayed, and my mum said, "Oh, that's
Name redacted. Farm. For privacy, we'll call my mum's friend of many years, Lucy. Lucy's grandfather used to be the tenant farmer on that farm, said my mum. My interest piqued immediately. She then says, I'm sure Lucy said that during World War II, American soldiers were based there, next to the farm. I think I startled the whole cafe when I squeaked in a state of excitement. Oh my God, the boots! I heard booted feet running. I couldn't understand why they sounded like that, but I was certain they sounded like soldiers running. It felt like a missing piece of the puzzle had suddenly and unexpectedly landed in my lap, and the key to it had been there all along. My mum, in some weird twist of fate, had the history of the land that I was unaware of. This is the message from my mum's friend regarding the history of the farm. I've omitted any personal elements, and the map I've included on the email is for your eyes only. Hi, Rachel's mum's name redacted. The bits I know about the farm are little. I wish I'd asked more questions when they were alive, but my granddad, grandmother, my dad and his elder brother moved to the farm in about 1940. They were there when the D-Day landings were gearing up, and Americans camped in the field on the left-hand side of the driveway to the house. My dad also said there was a tank that sank in that field. They left the farm around 1947 or 48. Regards, Lucy. Well, from our location, we could see the woods. We were in a slight valley. And from looking in detail at that map, I knew that we were on that farmland. I'm confident we were to the left of the drive of this house. This is where the American soldiers were stationed. Anyway, thank you again for reading my experiences. I hope I get to hear them read out. Many thanks, Rachel. Well, thank you so much, Rachel, for sharing your experience for episode 4 of season 16. And your first story for me is genuinely terrifying. I'd love to know more on that in terms of its location, and if you could provide that, that would be amazing. Also, any additional stories you have, we'd love to hear them. As Rachel's experience proves, we don't work on a first-come, first-served policy on this show, and we never have. We've worked on a what-fits policy. So, if you have an experience that you wish to share, email it over to contact@thedarkparanormal.com. As ever, I'd like to thank each and every one of you for choosing to spend your time with me here on your show. I'll speak to you again through the week for another minisode. And until next time, remember, when you're discussing the paranormal, always try and leave some of your disbelief at the door. And I'll see you next time, right here on The Dark Paranormal.